Hello, and welcome to Pet Talk with Mr. G. I'm your host, Sandra Pedregal, and I, like I said at the introduction of the program, Mr. G is not here today with us. He went in to get his teeth cleaned, and they discovered that his proteins were too high, and he might have some sort of infection or swelling. So he is going to be, he's at the vet, and after the show, I'm going to go pick him up. But that's not stopping us. We're going to be doing our show today about AB 1634, very, very controversial bill that has been written. And it's about mandatory spaying and neutering in California. And we have the author of the bill, Judy Mancuso. Welcome, Judy.
Hi, thank you.
How are you doing?
Very good, but I don't think it's so controversial.
Oh, my God, if you saw some of the emails I've been getting.
I have, believe me. They've come in through the website, but it is pretty mainstream.
Mm-hmm. First of all, could you please summarize what 1634 is about?
Okay, and I would like to say that actually, just to clarify, the author of the bill is Assemblymember Lloyd Levine, and I am one of the sponsors of the bill, along with California Veterinary Medical Association, California Animal Control Directors Association, and State Humane Association of California, and the City of Los Angeles. What the bill is about, it is a spay and neuter bill, and it's spay and neuter for most of the pets in California. We have several exemptions, but it is for dogs and cats who reach the age of 4 months. And we do give 75 days after that 4 months to 6.5 months if the animal is not ready for that spay and neuter, and there are medical exemptions as well.
And how do you determine or if an animal is not ready for spaying or neutering?
Well, that's up to the vet. Since California Veterinary Medical Association is one of the sponsors and has been in on crafting the language of the bill, they wanted to make sure that at any time the animal is, you know, in whatever state that they see, and Alan can speak to this more, Dr. Drewsies, maybe the animal's underweight or has a little respiratory problem. Of course, that would not be the time to spay and neuter, and so the animal has to be completely healthy. And as you know, there are several health benefits that come along with spaying and neutering early. And if the animal, let's say, was 14 years old and had renal failure, of course, we would not, you know, ask that that animal be spayed and neutered. That would jeopardize the health of the animal to put it under anesthesia. So that would be an exemption.
Okay. I'm going to be asking you some specific questions regarding the bill.
Okay.
Because I was reading it very carefully, and there's a lot of what the language of the bill says, that it leaves to the different jurisdictions to establish the fees.
Correct.
Because there is a fee if people want to maintain their animals intact.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, who qualifies for these intact permits? And second of all, how do you determine the fee? I mean, what if my jurisdiction decides that they want to charge $400? I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and it's probably never going to happen, and I'll tell you why. Animal control actually reports up to their county supervisors and their city councils. So they actually have to get approved by these, jurisdictions, the local jurisdiction, as we call them in the bill, and what they are. They have to get the approval for whatever they charge, whether it's adoption fee or, you know, to set these fees, they need, there's checks and balances. So an animal control director can't just wake up in the morning and say, gee, I think I'm going to charge $500 for an intact permit today. That's not going to happen. In the state of California, we have what's called differential licensing. So what that means is if you have an unaltered animal, you may pay $50, and if you have an altered animal, you pay $10. So for a lot of jurisdictions, a lot of animal control agencies, that won't change. That will be the intact permit, okay? It's just that there's going to be qualifications on whether you can get that intact permit now. Right now, you just pay that difference. and you can get that license. But now there's going to be some stipulations that come with it. So it could actually be $0 because it's just that license, that existing license. And then the local jurisdiction could charge for it. They could say, hey, let's do $20, let's do... But yes, I've seen this stuff going around on the internet, and it's total just scare tactics and hype, you know, $500, $1,000. I even saw one that was $1,500 we were going to be charging for an in-tech permit. So this is pretty crazy stuff.
Can the money from this bill be used for funding, for enforcement? I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about is, how do you really enforce this? I mean, let's be serious. I mean, are animal control people going to be going around looking with little, can you imagine, like a little chihuahua and this animal control person with a little magnifying glass looking underneath to see if, if the dog is intact or not?
That's a funny picture you paint. I haven't read or saw that one yet, but I have definitely seen some websites where they have, you know, the cops going door to door, you know. And no, that is just outrageous. They're not going to be doing anything like that. You know, when we start formulating this bill, we said, look, you know, right now we're killing, we know for sure over 400,000 dogs and cats, and we know that that number is much greater because that is just for city and county contracted shelters. So in the private sector, we're killing actually a lot more. And we're spending an outrageous amount of money, over $250 million tax dollars a year. So we say, well, you know, what can we do about this? How can we start bringing down these numbers instead of them either staying the same, you know, or going up? And so as far as enforcement goes, first of all, you have voluntary compliance. People will comply. You know, when I get in my car every day, I buckle up. And we abide by so many laws just because they're the law. And, of course, there's people that break laws every day, and they'll break this law just like they break other laws. But there's going to be law-abiding citizens who just abide by the law. And when we have those people do that, it's going to help. If you have a neighborhood cat who is right now roaming around unaltered and produces that feral cat colony or just some unwanted kittens that then go to the shelter. And then second of all, we do have the existing licensing program. And a lot of people say, well, you know, but that doesn't work already. People don't license their animals. You know, and you can say this for anything. You know, well, people break the speed limit. They should be licensing their animals. And sometimes they do canvass the areas trying to get people to license. And at that time, they will ask people, is this animal altered or unaltered? And that's when this in-tech fee would come into play. And then also animal control going out on their regular duties, their regular calls, you know, a dog barking in the backyard, the neighbor keeps having litters and litters of cats that are all over the neighborhood, and now this can be a tool for them to use just like any other law that they have on the books that they can use when they do those visits, animal cruelty, anything else.
But isn't it a little bit, I mean, idealistic to think that this could be actually enforced? Because let's say, for example, first of all, this is a civil type of enforcement. It's not a criminal enforcement. So if somebody gets cited and they decide not to pay the $500, or let's say, for example, they say, well, that's too much money, here, have my dog, then what's going to happen? How are you going to make sure that these jurisdictions get the money from that? People just say, you know what, I don't care.
Yeah, here. Well, turning in the animal is not going to work, okay, because the ticket is with the human, not the animal. So if they try to turn in the animal, you know, they still owe the ticket. The best case scenario for them is to get the animal altered. So most, and I'm going to kind of repeat what I've heard from the animal control officers that I've been working with over the last year. Most of the communities have low-cost or free spay-neuter. And in one county in particular, the animal control director has told me, you know, right now when they go out on a call and they see an unaltered animal, they say, you know, here's a voucher. Please get your animal spayed or neutered. And the voucher's like $20, $30. Okay, I think in that community it's actually $20. And so at that time, for that person to take that voucher, go get it spayed and neutered, not pay the ticket because the jurisdiction has the right to waive that ticket. Now you just got off for $20. Your animal is fixed. That's going to save you in the long run, because one of the things that happens, I'd like to tell you, quite often, is that animals get ill with cancers and whatnot that are preventable by spay and neuter, and people end up giving up their animals. They leave it at the vet. Oh, I can't afford to pay for it. And the vets then are faced with having to euthanize an animal because the person doesn't want to have to pay this price on, you know, because it has a cancer. So in the long run, this is going to benefit the person. It benefits the animal. It does make for a healthier animal. And so, you know, we want compliance. We don't want to be handing out tickets. And as far as you say that the animal control, you know, can't enforce it or won't enforce it, well, I beg to differ, because I've been working with these animal control officers for a year, and they can't wait to be able to enforce it. They want to enforce it. They want to stop killing all these animals. It is awful, and people are irresponsible.
Well, putting aside the fact whether people are irresponsible or not, if you have an individual who's already responsible, how are you going to make sure that they pay? Sometimes people have hundreds of parking tickets or thousands of parking tickets sometimes, and they don't pay their parking tickets. So if they don't pay their parking tickets, how are you going to make sure that they pay this?
Well, what we've tried to do in this bill, what we have accomplished in the bill, I should say, is giving the power to the local jurisdictions to come up with a way that is feasible for them to enforce this. So, you know, what CACTA, the California Animal Control Directors, and the State Humane, they will be coming up with guidelines to implement with this bill to all their members. And this will include a lot of different details on, you know, how exactly, just like I said, guidelines. If in somebody's jurisdiction they decide, you know, well, we're going to do it this way because it works for them, you know, that's good. But this is a baseline universal spay and neuter bill that folks can implement and also have the flexibility to make it their own.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the intact permits.
Yes.
Okay. And you say in the bill that each jurisdiction is going to be able to decide how much the intact permit is going to cost,
right,
and that it's an exaggeration, that it's going to cost hundreds or thousands of dollars,
absolutely,
that it probably is going to be the license and everything.
Right.
However, if, for example, at least here in San Diego County, for example, the maximum amount of animals a person can have is 5 animals.
Mm-hmm.
If I have 5 animals, even if the fee is not that much, you know, it can still add up.
Well, let me ask you, why do you have 5 unaltered animals?
Why not?
Because first of all, we're bringing in over 400,000 unwanted animals that we're having to kill. And
yeah,
you know,
but
we're bringing over 800,000. So I'm asking you, is there specifically a reason? Are you going to breed them? Are they a guide dog? Or is it just this is a luxury to you to have these 5 unaltered animals in your home?
I just love animals, and I just want to have these 5 animals I've fallen in love with, and they're going to be taken care of, and they're going to be treated very well. They're not unwanted animals. They are not unwanted animals, and I'm going to make sure that they don't breed among them. Why do I have to alter them? Why do I have to pay this intact fee to keep them like that?
Right, and most people think that the litter, the one litter they have, or the fact that it's unaltered is not contributing to our problem in the state. And of course, this is a problem in the entire United States, but in our state in particular. And you know, I'll give you an example. My sister had a collie, and she had a big fence in her backyard. And you know, I was telling her, Marianne, you should get, you know, Ebony was her name, you know, spayed and neutered. And she, you know, no, I don't want to. I don't have time. Whatever it was in that case. And Ebony got pregnant. Okay, a dog got into the yard, and I believe it jumped the fence or dug its way in. But these animals that are unaltered, and especially when the female animal's in heat, I mean, they draw attention and they go looking for love. And a lot of times these animals get hit by cars on the road because they're out roaming the neighborhood, because they're in heat, whatever the case is, or a male dog. And so Ebony had puppies, right? It was totally unintentional. My sister is a good, she takes care of her animals. She loves her animals so much, but the dog got pregnant. And I said, now what are you going to do? You know, I said, those two dogs that you now give away to someone, or, you know, the dog had two puppies, I said, is going to take homes away from two other animals, number one, right? And you think you're giving those animals to a good home, and they go out unaltered, and then this keeps perpetrating. This whole, you know, overpopulation thing happens because these animals have puppies, they go out to other families, they're unaltered, they have puppies, and this loop just keeps going of these we have to get to over 800,000 unwanted animals somehow. And it's not everybody purposely breeding to put animals in the shelters. It is accidental births. It's
you just went from 400,000 to 800,000, but...
No. It's over 800,000 that is our total intake, okay? Total intake. Now, the euthanasia is over 430,000. So let me clarify those two numbers.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying, is unwanted animals that come in. Now, some of those get adopted, some of them return, you know, home, and we wish those numbers were greater.
Okay. Let's go to the health issues. When we spoke initially to set up this interview, I told you I'm very concerned about the fact that it has to be at 4 months. And you were very nice to explain that kittens, for example, can get pregnant at 4 months and female...
Well, actually 5 months and the dogs at six.
And the dogs at six. And that's why 4 months were chosen. But
it's one of the reasons.
Okay.
Yes.
But I've read studies that, for example, there's a study done by... the Department of Veterinary Clinical Science from Purdue University and from the Cancer Foundation from Seattle, Washington. And basically it says that their results indicate that dogs undergoing early gonadotomy, which is the removal of their sex organs, have a significantly higher risk of appendicular bone sarcoma, suggesting that sex hormones may be important modifiers of bone sarcoma development.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, this is a serious thing. I mean, animals can get sick, and cancer in an animal is extremely expensive.
That's right.
So,
and it is very serious that we're killing, about a half a million of them as well a year, which is very serious. And what I would say to that is, number one, the studies that we cite and that we look at and we quote on our website and whatnot are from the Centers of Disease Control and from the American Veterinary Association. So, you know, what we look at is definitely the best data that's out there, the medical reports by the top folks. And like I said, CVMA is on board with this, and I know you have Dr. Alan Drusies on your show.
Alan, okay. Dr. Drusies, are you still there? Dr. Drusies?
Here.
Hi, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Can you tell me then, according to you guys, there's no danger to the animals about this these procedures at such an early age? That's not what I've read. I mean, I've read this almost the entire article written by Dr. Cooley, Dr. Schlitter, and Dr. Glickman from in the study of gonadal hormone exposure and bone sarcoma risk. I've also read another one from Department of Clinical Studies of Companion Animals in the Netherlands, and both say that there is some relationship, in one case a direct relationship between sex hormones and sarcoma development, and the other one that say it favors tumor progression.
Yes, I can comment on not necessarily the merits of those studies, but in general, on what the benefits and the risk-benefit analysis would tell us is the outcome for spaying and neutering. Certainly no one denies that, as with any surgical procedure, anesthetic and surgical procedures, there are inherent risks. If we eliminate those from consideration, the question generally arises, well, at what age, early spay-neuter, at what age do these problems develop, or these alleged increases in negative effects? And for the most part, the studies have not demonstrated a specific age that can be identified as a cause and effect relationship to subsequent cancer development or anything of the like. What is, however, abundantly clear is that the benefits from early spay-neuter, and if you want to term early spay-neuter at 4 months, that's fine. We term it, we determine it to be at 2 months of age, actually. The benefits of early spay-neuter far outweigh, far exceed the drawbacks of it. For example, probably the most common tumor in dogs is mammary tumors. The incidence of mammary tumors in female dogs that have been spayed before their heat cycle, so this would clearly be at that 4 month time frame, the incidence of mammary tumor development in those dogs is about as close to zero as one can get.
Okay. And what about prostate cancer?
Here's my view of these studies. They certainly, I'm not going to dispute the merits of the arguments that are made on a scientific basis for these studies. The problem that I have is when individuals cherry-pick phrases or conclusions from these studies and then apply those conclusions, those results, those opinions, oftentimes, to the entirety of the dog and cat population. That is disingenuous. There is scientific merit to a lot of these studies, but there is what we would call very little external validity. In other words, the subject population from which the study was made does not relate very well to the overall population of animals, in this case dogs or cats, in this country.
Okay, I'm gonna quote the chairman of the board of directors of the Canine Companions for Independence, and he quotes, this research has been repeated elsewhere with the same results. Increased incidence of health problems such as urinary incontinence, osteosarcoma, hemangiosarcoma, obesity, and orthopedic problems, as well as behavioral problems such as an environmental fear and the inter-dog aggression, are strong arguments against pre-pubertal sterilization of any animal or any dog. Do you mean to tell me that he's exaggerating?
Yes.
Oh. Why would he exaggerate?
Well, people make arguments generally to support their feelings or beliefs. Scientists make arguments based on the facts at hand.
Well, if I got a group of veterinarians or scientists that said exactly the same argument about you, would you be exaggerating?
No, I'm not talking about saying. Saying is, I mean, anybody can say anything. There are what are called peer-reviewed journals, scientific journals, that don't just print anything that comes to their publisher. The articles are reviewed by a panel of supposed experts in the fields that comment on the validity of the study, the scientific merit of the study, and the conclusions that are drawn from the study. They never comment on how applicable any particular study or the results are to anything else. Those conclusions are generally drawn by the people who read the article themselves. So just because something is published doesn't mean that it has universal acceptance, and it doesn't mean that tomorrow there could be a study of almost the identical population of animals or people or whatever it is, and come to different conclusions. We can I can use the analogy of breast cancer in women. I mean, there are lots of studies that indicate it's this or it's that. For the life of me, I don't understand why there is not more merit given to some studies that originated in Japan, which has a very low human breast cancer prevalence, that those same women that have a very low incidence of cancer, breast cancer in Japan, when they come to the United States to live, they wind up having the same prevalence as American women. And the conclusion that is drawn, whether it's right or wrong, whether certainly it's a conclusion drawn from the merits of these individual studies, is that, perhaps there's something in the diet of Americans that increase the incidence of cancer. So we can see in many facets of life how one study can contradict a previous study, sometimes even with completely opposing results. And who's right? I mean, I think that's a tincture of time, we'll say. But certainly, I can guarantee you that the benefits, both on a health basis and behavioral basis, of spaying and neutering, early spaying and neutering, far outweigh the drawbacks. And in fact, a lot of the studies have had animals that have been spayed and neutered at 6 months or a year or 2 years of age, and don't ever exactly define what, quote, early spay neutering is.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Drewis. We're going to go back to Judy because we are almost running out of time and we still have some callers that we have to get to. Judy, how does this act address tourists and visitors who bring their pets to this state? Do they have to get a special permit? Do they have to pay a special fee? How are you guys dealing with that?
Well, we need them to prove that, you know, they're from out of state. So a driver's license for the human, you know, and the license for the animal from out of state would suffice. And so this is a piece of the legislation that we've been working on. You know, we, like I said, we've been working on this for a year. You know, it's a work in progress, and we definitely want to make it so that people cannot, we don't want to cause loopholes in the language that anybody who doesn't want to spay or neuter just because they don't want to spay or neuter can use this exemption. So we want to make sure the exemption's right, but we all, and what we want to do is we don't want to, you know, if someone is a tourist or they're here for the dog show or the cat show or they bring in the animal for breeding, you know, all those things will be worked out, that and it is in this language that that can all still happen, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't want to infringe on people coming in from out of state, obviously, who are just here temporarily. But, you know, once they're a resident or the animal is a resident, then, you know, that's it. They do need to spay and neuter or fall under one of the exemptions.
Okay.
So that's getting taken care of. And it was not in one of our previous drafts. And, you know, it was just an oversight, to be honest. So we've fixed that.
Okay, we're going to take a short, very, very short little break, and when we come back, we're going to take the questions of a few callers that have been waiting patiently to be on the air, and when we come back, we will continue talking to Judy Mancuso about AB 1634. Call in with your questions and comments.
Radio. The number one source for informative talk on the World Wide Web.
World Talk Radio.
How much time each day do you spend managing your personal or business calendar? 15 minutes, a half an hour, maybe more. Is the conference room available for next week's meeting? And how many people do you have to ask to find out? Have you ever misplaced or, worse yet, lost your day planner or handheld device? And what do you do about that missing information? Do you own or operate a salon or carpet cleaning business? How about a realty office or any one of a thousand other service-based organizations? Can your customers make their appointments even when your office is closed? If any of this sounds familiar, then Schedule Online is the solution for you. For more information, call toll-free 888-668-3355. That's 888-668-3355. Or visit us online at www.scheduleonline.com.
Listen. The world is talking. World Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome back to Pet Talk with Mr. G. Normally we have some music, but we're trying to get through this fast because we have very limited time, and we have two callers on the line. We have Beth. Beth, are you with us? Hello, Beth, from Central California. Beth?
Hello?
Hi, Beth, are you with us?
I sure am.
Yes, Beth is from Central California. She is from SPCA, which is the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Please keep your comment or question. If it's a comment, keep it short. If it's a question, please take your answer off the air, okay?
Okay, no problem.
Thank you. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that we've tried for a very long time to do education outreach and to even offer free spays and neuters. And we just now, we need the backup of the law on this, because if all of those other ways that we were going about this would have worked, we wouldn't have seen decades of this problem. And the numbers just won't decrease unless we have the law behind it.
Okay. Thank you, Beth. Judy, any comments on this?
Well, that I can't agree with Beth more. I mean, what she says is echoed throughout the state. In this past year, I've had the opportunity to talk to people all the way north, all the way south, all the way east and west, and what I'm hearing is that we're euthanizing 70% to 90% of the dogs and cats that come into shelters that are adoptable, wonderful animals, and it's just that we don't have enough homes. These areas have had the vouchers and the education programs, and they're not working.
Have people tried tax exemptions or tax deductions, credits?
Anything to do with taxes is not popular with the legislature. So, you know, loading up a bill that, is going to do something, cause the state more money. Actually, there is a fiscal mandate in our state from the Hayden bill from 1998 that is now the third largest mandate in the state of California. And that was the law that said that you needed to keep the animals longer. Prior to 98, an animal could come into the shelter and be killed the same day. So if you lost your animal and it was over a weekend when the shelter was closed, you came on Monday, doggy or kitty was dead. Okay, now if you could imagine that. So the Hayden law said, whoa, 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 you got to keep these animals longer, give people time to adopt. We can't just be, you know, killing all these animals, even though we still are, but okay, the Hayden definitely helped. But what it did is it caused this mandate to build more shelters, to have more staff, to have more computers for good reasons. I'm not saying it wasn't for a good thing. But that has now created the third largest mandate in the state.
Okay. Let's go to Melanie from Los Angeles. Melanie, you're on the air. Melanie. Joe, where's
comment
Melanie?
That everyone that I am involved with in many different areas of business and as well as being an animal lover, of course, believe that it is unfair that the humane issues aside, the catch, kill, and dispose industry that we have been forced to go into because people are not responsible has cost us, I've heard upwards of, and Judy can address this better than I, $275 billion in California over 10 years. All I can say is that as a taxpayer, I resent the thought that, and I'm sure many people do, that our taxpayer dollars are going to kill and dispose of animals rather than support other important issues.
Okay, thank you, Melanie. Judy, any comments?
Yes, I'd like to give you the 10-year numbers. Were that in 10 years, now this is total intake, dogs and cats, going back to the separation of what the numbers mean, 8.9 million animals. We killed 5.3 million, sit down, because we spent, to do all this, $2.75 billion. Now, I am with Melanie. There are better places for our money. This is a crisis in our state, and it is inexcusable.
Okay. Any other callers? Joe, any other callers? Hello, Joe.
We've got Manhattan Beach calling in right here. Let's see who that is.
Okay, we have somebody from Manhattan Beach calling in. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, wonderful. My name is Pam in Manhattan Beach, California. And I understand that throughout the United States, 15,000 dogs and cats are euthanized, killed every single day simply because they're homeless. About 20 years ago, when I was a teenager, the SPCA came to my school and they told us we should spay and neuter. I went home and told my mom we should spay Bandit. We lived on a farm in Northern California, used to mail dogs. My mom didn't get around to it. Bandit had 8 puppies. We tried to find homes for them. We found a home for one, and we took the other 7 to the pound. 6 of those 7 were euthanized 20 years ago, and the problem is still going on, and now it's at 15,000 every single day. It's just not right. Financially, ethically, we're in the 21st century, people. Spay and neuter your pets. It's so incredibly silly not to.
Okay. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you.
Judy, we're going to go to the next, see if we have a next caller.
Okay, thank you.
We're having some problems with the lines. Our board, our server board got disconnected, and so we're trying to get people on the show to make comments. I have one question for you, though, Judy. Does this bill infringe on personal rights?
You know, well, personal rights is a big issue. As my own personal rights, I don't want to pay to house and kill animals. And as my personal right, if government is addressing an issue in our state in a certain way, and that certain way is causing us, if it creates bigger government and is fiscally unresponsible and just so big and bloated, then I expect government to do something about it. And to maintain status quo and know that this is the situation we're in would be so irresponsible of our state as it is throughout the United States. And I believe that Pam, the numbers that she quoted are probably actually low. And that's one of the problems we have, is we really, you know, can get better numbers for this. And I started digging out these numbers. No one even knew the size of this problem until I started digging. And one of the things that we are going to sponsor is a very large research project to get the truth out from the private shelters as well, which we have not had access to their numbers. You know, I spoke to one private shelter who told me they bring in 50,000 animals and they kill 38,000. Those aren't on the books, okay? We're not even talking about them. We need to talk about them. We need them all. We need to know how large this really is. And I believe if we had all those numbers in, we're probably killing up to that 800,000 or maybe a million, and we're bringing in more than 1.5 million. We have more than 30 million people in this state. So, you know, as my personal rights, I'm not flipping the bill for this. And everyone should be outraged and not want to flip the bill for this.
Okay. Well, Judy, thank you so much for being with us. And we've had such response about this show that we're going to be doing a second show on June 1st. And we're going to go and talk to the opposition to the bill, just so that people don't start screaming and yelling that we're not being fair.
So, very good. I understand.
On June 1st, we will continue with part 2 of AB 1634.
And we'd love to bring that opposition over to our side, and we invite them into our state shelters, and they can also work in the euthanasia rooms.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we're going to take a short little break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.